Recently, I spoke about how foolish people heed the advice of no one, and I introduced that talk by saying that this is more of a social or behavioral rather than a directly spiritual topic, but as it also affects devotees within the Krishna consciousness movement, that I felt it was important to address that issue. Well, today also I want to speak on a topic which is similar. It's not directly spiritual, but it pertains to the behavior of our devotees, how we're living in this world, a topic that needs to be addressed, at least for persons who like to listen to me. In some sense, I'm a life coach. I'm giving direction on how to live our life in this world. And also recently, a little further back in the past, I spoke quite strongly about or against the life coaching scams and bluffs that are going on, giving people formulae by which they can be successful and happy in this world. Well, that kind of life coaching is a bluff, but actually, everyone needs a guide in their life. Everyone needs gurus. The first guru is the mother, and the parents, and elders, and for the elder brother is to be accepted as a guru, as seen classically in the Ramayana. So we do need gurus. And we do need guides on how to live in this world, but I was particularly speaking about the bluffing and atheism and misguidance that's going on in the name of a multi-billion-dollar business of life coaching. But I'm also, as is my duty, having received instruction from very great guru, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, and it's my duty on his order, as is the system since time immemorial, that one who learns that which is beneficial should pass it on to the next generation. Anyway, getting to the point, not waffling too much, I've been accused of waffling, is tremendous suffering that so many children undergo. And maybe unknown to themselves, the parents themselves may be the cause of their own children's suffering. Now, naturally, that sounds ridiculous because it's expected that parents wish the welfare of their children, not only wish for that, but the parents sacrifice, the parents practically for the For the parents, the children's welfare becomes more important than their own. That's the normal course of human society, and even in dog society, and among most species of life, especially the higher forms. However, there is rampant youth suicide, child suicide, youth suicide. Here in India, according to statistics, approximately one youth suicide, if we take up to the age of the late 20s or whatever, youth, approximately one every hour youth suicide in India. And myself and practically anyone living in India, we all know of cases of if we don't. I've personally known people who are, well, not very well, but many years ago, I knew from one family someone committed suicide, and you hear from time to time such and such, oh, their child committed suicide or something like this, or my brother committed suicide or something like this. It's widespread. it's a great blot on the family when that happens socially, because then often people think that, well, the parents maybe mistreated the child. And I'm going to investigate that a little, how actually in many, many cases, the parents are inadvertently, in one sense, to blame. Now, if we think of youth suicides, well, we think, well, maybe the main reason is love, jilted lovers. They commit suicide. That may be one reason. A mental instability, that may be one reason, although you may say that anyone who commits suicide must be mentally unstable, but something more like congenital mental instability rather than caused by circumstances. But the major cause of youth suicide is stress that children and teenagers and those who are a little older, that they're under tremendous pressure to succeed in their studies, and even after they've finished their studies, to get a good job and to get ahead and be successful in life. It's tremendous pressure, and we see young children now, the COVID virus effect, that we don't see children going to school, but otherwise we'd see children before school hours having coaching, small coaching classes, maybe on we used to see here in Salem, South India, one house we were renting before we got this land, just on the opposite house on the roof every morning after Mangal Aarti, as soon as the sun comes up, the children would congregate and they'd have coaching group on the roof of the house, and then the terraced roof, and then after in the evening also in the same roof there'd be more classes, and so children go to school, they have coaching from a very young age, they go to school with their carrying huge piles of books which they're supposed to carry within, absorb and carry in their heads. And the tremendous pressure to be the top student, or at least in the top five or whatever. And of course, only one person in the batch is going to be the top. And however much you press children and however much they try, not everyone has the same ability. There's going to be those who are not so bright and who don't do well. And even if all do well, there'll be a gradation, and some are going to be lower on the scale than others. And the tremendous expectations of their parents to push them to do well in their studies, with the thought that, well, we're doing it for the good of the children, because they have to get ahead in life, and this is the way. And there's also prestige, is because parents, they like to show off, my child that's a topper in the class. But basically, we hope, at least the main motive of the parents is they want to see their children do well. But what's happening is they're torturing their children, and the children may not even show it. Often the suicide cases they don't show it, but internally they're feeling tremendous pressure, and then they feel tremendous guilt if they don't do well. And sometimes we see even students who do very well, they also commit suicide. They're top in their class, but they're bottom in terms of their satisfaction, they're feeling depressed or whatever. Or the parents may push the show. I know of one case where one young man is being pushed all the time saying, you have to be like so-and-so. Someone else they know who's very successful and really on top of the world materially, and they're pushing, you have to be like him. And it's tremendous pressure. Because, again, how many people can be so successful? It's a matter of one's previous karma, if one can be so successful. And not everyone's going to be like that. And if you're not, if you don't come up to the expectations of your parents, then again, you feel, however, you're trying your best. The child's trying his best. He's not emotionally mature. He's trying his best. And all he knows is the world of his parents and the small society he's in, and everyone's trying to succeed. And if he doesn't do well, he just feels he's completely useless. There's also peer pressure among children themselves. If someone's not good looking, it's just like not everyone can be a topper in the class. So not every child is good looking. Some are overweight, some are underweight, some have a funny bend in their nose, or someone has their teeth are not in, they don't look so nice, or whatever. Children can be very cruel among each other, or if they don't do well in class, if they don't get good scores in the exams, they'll beat them and tease them, and bullying goes on also. So in this way, we think that, well, childhood should be very happy, but for many, many children it's not. And of course, although the vast majority of children don't commit suicide, we can understand that if a significant number do, that there's a whole syndrome that's going on, and that most children are affected by it. Some become so distraught that they commit suicide, and others are just distraught and they don't commit suicide, but they're still stressed out. They may have depression and so many things. So the parents think that they're really doing the best for their children, but pushing them into the life of intense pressure. And it doesn't stop when they finish their studies, because then they go into the corporate world, and again they're under tremendous pressure to succeed, and their whole life is like that. Why do you want to push your children into such a life? That should be considered. Now, what I'm speaking about, this is mostly in the upper strata of society, the ones who are pushing their children to succeed in studies and who have the money to send their children to the top schools and have tuitions and all these kind of things. And now among the more upper strata of society, say middle class, and divorce is also more common. And that's another kind of way in which parents make their children suffer. I know myself that my parents divorced. It was very, very hard for me. Mentally, it was emotionally very, very hard. Looking back on it, I can say, well, now I can understand. But at the time, it was very, very difficult. And in one sense, it was good in that it was part of a emotional process that brought me to Krishna consciousness. But it was very, very tough. And what used to happen in the old culture in India, if two spouses weren't happy with each other, they would tolerate, at least for the sake of the kids, and they wouldn't fight in front of the kids. And certainly they wouldn't undermine each other, and one spouse say to the other, oh, your father's no good, or your mother's no good, because they're really thinking of the good of the children. Or one spouse might think that, well, it's for the good of the children we need to divorce. But unless there may be cases if, for instance, the father is sexually abusing the children, which also does happen, and there are grounds. But otherwise, just if you don't like him or this and that, or you have some arguments with him, divorce is too easy in the modern world, and the sufferers are the children. You may think, well, let me get out of this situation, be less suffering for me, but better if the parents, they just think, let us act civilly at least towards each other. And anyway, life is short, and we have to live in this world in a way, in accordance with dharma. And we have to think what's best for the children, not what I think is best. So that's another way, and that's another form we can say of child abuse. And of course, the parents are causing their children to suffer if they sexually abuse them, which of course isn't very common, but is not very uncommon also, unfortunately. And so I'm giving this talk here and to try to make parents, whoever might be kind enough to listen to this and take it seriously, to make them think, well, maybe they need to rethink how they're raising their children. But who's going to listen if they're sexually abusing their children? They're not even moral human beings. They're not, even animals don't do things like that. It's some really, really, what kind of low consciousness? It's almost unimaginable. Such are the effects of Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy and just the worst things, how people can act so badly. But anyway, that is relatively uncommon. I'm talking about the upper strata society. They're pushing their children for success in studies and may divorce also or fight in front of the children and in this way cause great distress to their children. Among the lower strata of society is fairly common that drunkenness, the father comes home drunk and beats the wife, beats the children, he doesn't know what he's doing. That's another great source of distress for children. Now, I said I'm giving this talk mostly for our devotees. Drunkenness, of course, may be in a higher strata of society also. Higher than we're talking about in terms of what people generally think to be higher, which means if you have more money. Drunkenness may be there, and spouse beating. It's not only wife beating. Sometimes wives beat husbands also. And beating the children, and just beating, let's just wild, and just letting out one's frustration. What a horrible age we live in, but at least, I said I'm speaking for the devotees, so this getting drunk, hardly we find devotees do that, because devotees, they don't get drunk, they don't take alcohol. There may be some stray cases, which I'm not aware of those who are supposed to be devotees who also drink, but it's really forbidden, taboo, and it doesn't happen much among devotees, although it is common in the wider society. So these are issues that, as a society, we have to think about. If children are brought up in unhappiness, then what kind of people are they going to be, and how are they going to raise their children in the next generation? That was a major concern of Arjuna at the beginning. We find at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna was complaining to Krishna that if we fight, and then the women will be unprotected, and they'll give birth to children who are of very poor consciousness, and then the whole world will become hellish. And practically we see that's going on at the present time. That the generation after generation, people are becoming more and more degraded. Where does it stop? Well, individually, we can take a rethink of how we're living our lives and how we are training our children and raising our children, what is to be done? We may say that, well, I have to push my children to succeed. There's no other way. The society is set up in such a way that if you don't have a good job, if you don't have a good college degree, and then you can't get a good job, and then you have to do that. Otherwise, you end up with some low-paying job, and it's miserable. Anyway, you have to do some kind of job, so why not work hard, and then you can get a better-paying job. This is all... So we have to push the children to succeed. But it's all based on the misconception, well, some more than one misconception. One thing is that there is no alternative to this present society that we live in. Another misconception is that it is for the good of the children that they get more money and they become more successful in societal terms. But of course, the parents, they want the happiness of the children, therefore they push them to succeed with the idea that if they get more money, then they'll be more happy. But that's a gross misconception in itself, because we don't find that that's true. And if they have to work all their life under tremendous stress, then they may have more money, but they're definitely not more happy. So that's a great misconception which practically the whole society has bought into, and even among our devotees it's very widespread. Another misconception is that this is the only way to live, and that might have been true for all of us if Srila Prabhupada hadn't kindly, I'm speaking among devotees in particular here, if Srila Prabhupada hadn't kindly given us the clue that you don't have to work hard like this. Nayang deho dehabhajang riloke kashtan kama narhate virbhujang ye tapo divyam putraka yena satlat shud yed yasmad brahma sokyam tuanantam. Srila Prabhupada often quoted this from Rishabhdev's teachings, that one should, having attained the human form of life, and Srila Prabhupada often paraphrased it like this, one should not work hard to have a life like hogs and dogs who eat stool, but rather one should undergo divine austerities by which one can become situated in the topmost platform of goodness and achieve unlimited, eternal, transcendental bliss. So in pursuit of this general guideline, Srila Prabhupada very much advocated that devotees follow the motto of simple living and high thinking, develop communities in which everyone has to work, everyone does something, but there's not this pressure to succeed, and the whole goal of life is that the devotees live together in farm communities, rural communities, farming, weaving, spinning, local simple cottage industries, live very simply, and we also have schools for children in which basic skills needed to negotiate their way in the world are given, but the real center is on the focus of life, which is to become Krishna conscious. So we don't need to push our children to become successful in a way of life that can bring them neither happiness in this world nor fulfill the purpose of human life, which is to become Krishna conscious. It means a change of consciousness. And instead of thinking that money, prestige, social position is the cause of happiness, that's a great mistake. So if we want the happiness of our children, we should think, what is their happiness here in this world? Clearly it doesn't come from being a success in a in a grossly unhappy and misguided society. And we should consider also the ultimate goal of life, and the which is to become Krishna conscious, and the duty of parents to guide their children toward that. Again, from Rishabhdev's teachings, and again a quote that Srila Prabhupada often cited. Guru na sasyad, swajano na sasyad, pita na sasyad, janani na sasyad, daivang na tatsyan, na patischa sasyan, namo chayadya samupeta mrityum. One should not become a guru or intimate with or a person or father or mother or accept worship from others or become the husband of another unless he or she can guide his dependent on the path by which they can become free from birth and death. That is the foremost duty of the parent. We think that the foremost duty of the parent is to give them a good education by which they can get ahead. But that is not according to the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The foremost duty is to guide them on the path back to Godhead, back to Krishna. And in this regard, the Krishna Conscious Movement is setting up farm communities for re-establishing pristine Varnashram Dharma, with gurukuls and vocational training. We invite devotees, come, join, give your children a better future in the true sense of the term. It takes boldness to go against the grain. It takes boldness to sustain to tolerate all the insults that people say, oh, you're not looking after your children properly, you're not giving them a good job, why are you leaving the society, you're running away, there'll be so many taunts. So it takes a boldness to act in a way that is actually for the benefit of your children. But please kindly consider, parents, you want the happiness of your children. Don't make your children suffer. Don't torture them. Act in a way that is best for them in the truest sense of the term. And if we're actually devotees of Krishna, or we've actually received the mercy of the devotees of Krishna, we will understand that the only true benefit is to guide the children in a manner that they can be Krishna conscious under the direction of guru, sadhu, shastra, with particular regard to the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, who came to this world, saw this whole... He lived in an India which was rapidly going toward materialism, in which Pandit Nehru and others were preaching that all India's problems are because it's too religious, we need to become materially advanced. Srila Prabhupada went to the materially advanced West. He went to America in the 1960s, which was materially in practically almost like in a different universe to India, or so much more materially advanced. Srila Prabhupada was not impressed by it at all. He saw through the hollowness of this materialistic society, and being inspired and directed by Krishna, he wanted to give everyone the best way to live, both materially and spiritually, in which children can actually grow up in happiness. How often do you see your children laughing in a carefree way, knowing that they're happy, they feel secure? This is how children should be growing up: secure, happy, happy in Krishna consciousness. So kindly consider, and don't make your children suffer. Hare Krishna. Dante nidhaya churnakang padiyani patya kritva chakaku shatameta daham bravimi. Hey sadhava sakala eva vihaya dura chaitanya chandra charane guruta anuragaha vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.